In the early 18th century, the Anglo-American Puritan theologian Cotton Mather theorized that the proper order of the household is a hierarchy, with the father as the top, followed by the mother, followed by the children, and followed by the slaves. And this vision of the household went on to determine the aspirations of those who orchestrated the American Revolution. Those bastions of individual freedom understood freedom in feudalistic, patriarchal, and supremacist terms. New England would not be like the England its founders sprang from, for this country would not be defined by the will of one king who rules by a divine right before which all must bow, but rather a compartmentalization of colonized land ruled by the individual wills of noble, white, property-owning men. Each man would be his own king, each inhabiting his own kingdom, with a woman to bear him children, children to be his heirs, and slaves to work his plantation. The underlying conceit, of course, is that these men have the right to conquer and rule in this way. By virtue of the color of their skin, their noble heritage, their prosperity and acquisition of land, and their manhood, it was their manifest destiny to found this nation where each man is meant to rule in his own way. United States. For now hundreds of years, men have been fighting to establish and secure this economy of domination. All the while, they have been met with resistance from those they seek to dominate. The women's liberation movement, the black liberation movement, the workers' liberation movement, the queer liberation movement, and a far less visible movement of children fighting for their liberation. This week, we heard news of yet another attempt by white men of establishing and securing their domination. Women and parents have had the right to an abortion for now half a century, and there is no doubt that most Americans are in favor of upholding that right. But the USA is not a democracy. It is not a nation of equals where decisions are made based on the votes of each resident. It is still a nation where white property-owning men hold the most power and have the most say. Now, in the late 19th century, as the women's liberation movement was first gaining ground in the United States, women developed the concept of voluntary motherhood. And as a strategy for fighting for their rights, they began to deny men their sexuality and refrain from sexual activity with men. As a result, the birth rate among white women drastically decreased. And in 1905, President Theodore Roosevelt called this development race suicide. So 4 decades after the Emancipation Proclamation, when white men were desperately trying to stop black progress to repress and re-enslave black people, when the KKK was growing into a huge national organization and white people were lynching black people all over the country, white men resented the women's movement for depleting their numbers at a time when they were trying to reassert dominance. And in 1953, James Baldwin prophesied, "The world is white no longer, and it will never be white again." Indeed, our world is only becoming increasingly multicultural and multi-ethnic, and it is not difficult to imagine a day when no one has a pale enough pigmentation to be called white. Despite that fact, and actually because of that fact, the desperation on the part of white supremacists has resulted in some serious reactionary efforts. Donald Trump's presidency being a prime example, and the Capitol insurrection on January 6th being another. This latest attack on voluntary motherhood is yet another. Justice Alito, Donald Trump, Mitch McConnell, Ronald DeSantis, and too many others are desperately trying to resist race suicide. But of course, race is a social construct, an arbitrary misnomer made up by white people to distinguish themselves from others for the purposes of domination. This anxiety about race suicide is really an anxiety about the loss of the original American dream of plantations for every property-owning white man. Now, what does the Bible say? Today, we are reading the book of Revelation. It is not the most popular of biblical books, not least because it is one of the most confounding of biblical books. And the white American man's imagination has filled this book with its own ideology, so that it is made to be a story about Jesus, the warrior king, coming down from heaven, laying waste to his enemies, and conquering the world for his big dad. Even more, it is depicted in evangelical churches as literal prophecy of what is to come in the future. God will take all the sinners, heretics, foreigners, gays, lesbians, communists, and feminists, and throw them into hell so that the mighty Christians can rule for eternity, washed by the blood of Jesus and made white as snow. Which is a statement comes up in the book of Revelation. And this verse has actually been used to indoctrinate black people into self-hatred, so that they would hate their blackness and want to become white. But as with most evangelical theology, this reading requires an ignorance of history and a disdain for critical thinking and research. I know because I grew up with evangelical theology. Revelation was written toward the end of the first century, after Rome besieged Jerusalem and destroyed the Jewish temple. It was a difficult period for Jewish people, and at the time, Christians were conflated by the empire with Jews. Jesus was crucified by Rome because his movement posed a threat to the Roman occupation of Judea. And after his death, the Jesus movement continued to pose a threat to Roman rule. So Christians were regularly arrested, interrogated, imprisoned, and even martyred. So the prophet who wrote Revelation was responding to this threatening situation. He was addressing churches in Asia Minor who were mourning their dead, anxious about their future, and uncertain where God was in all of it. What the prophet of Revelation gives them is a vision of the fall of the Roman Empire and the birth of a new world of universal justice. But he couldn't very well circulate a letter to churches up and down a coastline occupied by Rome, which explicitly rejoiced over the complete destruction of Rome, without getting himself and those churches in a whole heap of trouble. So he used a form of literature that had been growing among marginalized Jewish sects, which is today called apocalyptic literature. It's actually called apocalyptic literature because of the book of Revelation, the Greek word for revelation being apocalypsis. This literature portrays historical events and lays out confessions of faith using mythological images of cosmic battles and epic monsters. The images in Revelation are deeply symbolic and strategically chosen as coded language through which the prophet could communicate his message to other Christians existing under occupation. He based the images off different passages in Jewish prophetic texts, for example, saying Babylon instead of Rome. This practice of coded language is a common trait among occupied peoples. It gives a powerless people an upper hand, not only by allowing them to define the world in their own terms, but also to communicate in a language the empire can't track. For example, in Jamaica, the Rastafarians did not call the British Empire or the United Kingdom. They called it Babylon. So with his vision, the prophet sought to comfort the Christians of Asia Minor, that those they have lost will not be forgotten, that the empire is not the eternal, all-encompassing force it portends to be, that the powers of domination cannot last forever. They cannot last because they have no right to exist, and because they can never outlast the truth. The philosopher Millus of Samos, I might be quoting the wrong philosopher. It might be a different philosopher, but he's an ancient pre-Socratic Greek philosopher. He said, "There is nothing stronger than something which is true. If something is to exist forever, it must be in harmony with the truth, or else it will always be vulnerable, always just a matter of time away from being exposed, undermined, and overruled." And indeed, the Roman Empire that lynched Jesus came to an end, as all economies of domination must. The empire of white men will be laid to waste. The plantations will be brought to ruin. The white man's concrete jungle will come crumbling down as a new people emerges with a new world. Amidst the rubble, they will plant trees and herbs and flowers and all manner of life-giving plants. The world will not be white, but green, lusciously, abundantly green. Its people will not be white, but countless shades of countless colors. The roots of this new world will never fail, because its strength will be truth. Its power will be the very nature in its bones. This is God's promise to those who would make no peace with oppression, to those who would instead live each day in the knowledge of their responsibility to care for the whole earth and to love all who inhabit it. I ask, are we such people? Now, we share the sermon at St. Lydia's, so after a brief period of silence, I'm going to open it up for anyone to share a story or experience sparked either by the text or my sermon. But we'll first begin in silence.